for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
I'm glad you're listening to the 43rd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much. This week I have a great interview with Alexander Finbow from Renegade Arts Entertainment. And he talks about a lot of the projects that they're working on there, including Turning Tiger and Shame, which are really great books that they're creating. Then I review the newest comics, followed by our weekly news and previews with Ian Cullen and Gianluca Glazer, and things wrap up with our usual look into the local comic store. There's a lot to get to, so let's get to it. Okay, I'm talking today with Alexander Finbow from Renegade Arts Entertainment. How are you doing today, Alexander?
I am very, very good, Wayne.
We'll start off with finding out more about Renegade Arts Entertainment. What would you like us to know about you guys?
We are a creator-owned company. The directors of the company, it's myself. I come from a film background originally. I was a writer-director for movies. And then I met Doug Bradley, the actor, who's most well-known for his portrayal of Pinhead in the Hellraiser films. The legend of comic writing, Alan Grant. And they were working on a movie with another comic creator called Tony Luke, who's worked in Japanese comics, Kodansha, on manga titles, and in the UK on titles like 2000 AD. And they were making a movie called Dominator X, which was a rock and roll anime. And they brought me in to help finish the movie off and finish the financing, because we kind of knew about each other from the film industry. We'd never worked together. It took me a year to try and figure out how to finish their film for them, and we realized it just wasn't going to happen. And there was just too much of a mess had been created by the producer. But what we did discover was that we really enjoyed each other's company, and telling war stories and talking about the great experiences we'd had in our creative careers and the occasions when we've been screwed over or things have gone wrong or where people let us down, which kind of dominated the early parts of each conversation in the pub before we got really enthusiastic about what we love about movies, about comics, about stories. And eventually the penny dropped that maybe we could set up our own company, something where we could take the stories and the projects that we were passionate about and look after them, give them the time they need, not worry about tweaking stories to fit marketing schedules, to really ensure that the story is as close to the vision we had as the creators as possible. So we set up Renegade as an answer for that. Unfortunately, Tony Luke got ill very quickly and had to leave the company, but the rest of us are still going. More and more creators have been joining us over the last few years as people start to figure out who we are and what we're doing.
Well, of course, as a Batman fan, Alan Grant's name is well known to me. He developed the ventriloquists
yes.
and Scarface. So his contribution to the Batman mythology, I thought, more than anything else. So I'm very familiar with his work. Of course, he's written Judge Dredd, done all kinds of writing over the years. So great writer. In fact, he's written one of the books that you all are creating. It's The Locksleys and the War of 1812, right?
Yes.
Yeah, which is an interesting historical piece. I got a chance to read a preview of it. It's really good. I really like the fact that he lives in the period. A lot of people, when they go back to historical periods, rewrite it with modern sensibilities. Most of it is about what actually happened or what seems to have happened back in those days. Do you want to talk a little bit about that book, about what it's about?
Sure, yeah. All the books that we do are very important to me, but this one particularly I'm looking after, because it's about a period in history that, for me, coming from England originally, I knew nothing about. I studied history at school until I was 18. I could tell you loads about European history and about American independence, but we never did a single day on the War of 1812. And it's one of those historical events that, when you look at it in detail, you realize that the ramifications of that conflict could have been huge for Canada and for America. A slightly different outcome would have meant that Canada was wiped off the map. And if it swung the other way, there's a chance that a chunk of America could become part of Canada. So it's fascinating. And I really wanted to do something for the Bicentenary that showed a lot of people that didn't really know much about the history. I discovered that in Canada, some people knew a little bit about it. Now, everyone talks about burning down the White House, but the events leading up to it and why it happened, they were a little bit muddy on. And in America, I found that that there was more awareness, but again, there was a lot of misunderstanding about the events leading up to the war, what happened, and the political ramifications for the country as a whole after the war. So what I wanted to do was do a compelling story as a graphic novel. I knew Alan would do a fantastic job on the script because he is brilliant at taking characters, concepts, and turning it into a wonderful story. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do it in a way that if you were a kid, say you were a 12-year-old kid and you were kind of interested in history, but you really didn't want to pick up a history book, you could pick up the graphic novel and could very quickly start reading and get lost in the story, get to the end of it and say to your friend, wow, that was a great story, I really enjoyed it. And then get to school and suddenly realize you know all the historical stuff. Didn't even realize you were learning it. And at the same time, I wanted comics fans and people that know the medium really well to enjoy the book, love the artwork and the way that Alan's crafted the story. Mm-hmm. And the three guys doing it have done a fantastic job.
Oh, I agree. I read it and it was very much fun to me. As an American, I wasn't offended by the general. There's a conflict that takes place in the book about the Canadians sort of coming on an American fort. And what they do to get the Americans to surrender was quite – actually, I found it funny. It was quite enjoyable that they did some stuff to make it look like they had a lot more people than they did. And the American general, rather than sacrificing his troops, decided to surrender, which I thought was a really brilliant thing. You know, one of the things that the book teaches is strategy. And I really love that whole business about it. I wonder how many other generals through history have actually read that experience and found out. And I thought it was a really good thing for school kids and for people interested in history to know was exactly how that situation came down. I do want to say that I did like the art. Sometimes historical things tend to be hard to read or hard to understand, but it's very clean, very sharp art. So I thought it told the story very well.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear it. I'm very pleased with Claude and Laverne's artwork. I don't know if you've seen any of the sneak peeks that we've put onto the 1812 Facebook page this week. It's some of the later pages, and it just looks stunning. The guys have done such a good job.
Well, it's great stuff, and I do think that history is something the comics tend not to do because somehow we don't want to look back. That's sort of old. Well, we want to look forward. We want sci-fi. We want those kinds of things. And yet, there's so much rich history that could be told, and we could learn so much. It's funny you said about learning history and not realizing you were. When I was a kid, I used to read the Justice League of America, and it was written in such a way that they taught you science while you were reading. And this is way back when, in the early 60s. They would go to places, and they would actually be teaching us, here's a part where there's fire, and then there's wind, and then there's ground, and those are the elements. And I was like, oh, those are the elements. That's cool. So I think there's a place for that, and I think that it's important to learn as well as be entertained.
Yeah, I think there is a place for it. What I always tell everyone we work with is the story has to come first. You know, you have to engage people. You have to move them. You have to get them excited. Get the emotions involved. And if you can do that and have whatever the history or the science or anything else that you want to weave into your story behind it, then people will read it without getting turned off, without going, oh, man, stop preaching. Stop teaching me. Yeah. So everything that happens in the 1812 war book is historically accurate. Mm, cool. But you wouldn't necessarily know it because you're following the adventure of this family. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's a perfect blend. I'm so pleased. This book's been in the works for 3 years. And we're 3 weeks away from having the whole thing finished and ready to go to the printers. And it's just nice to see that it is as good as I'd hoped it would be.
Great. Well, I'm glad to hear it because I enjoyed reading it. I thought it was a great book, and I hope people will take the initiative to go and get it. Now, my understanding, this was originally sold at the New York Comic Con last year?
The preview comic, yes. Yeah, we printed some up as a special just to kind of get some interest out there. And now we've got it available digitally on our iPad app for 99 cents. And it'll be on our website as well because the book is initially coming out as a hardback. So it's going to be a big 174-page hardback book, beautifully printed, about 10% bigger pages than normal comic book, US comic book. So it'll be a really nice book to read. And then we're hoping to do a paperback towards Christmas if the interest is there.
Very good. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait for a good hardback to come because I think this would be a nice thing. One of the things is when you buy hardback comics, people think that you look like you're some brilliant reader. Then they pull the book out and look inside and see it's a comic. They're, wait a minute, this is a comic. But something like that I think is something worth having because there's so much to learn. I always love stuff about the American Civil War. And so there's so many things that I don't know and I want to learn. So I think this is a great comic for that, to meet that need.
Great. I'm glad you feel like that, Wayne. I agree.
Okay, let's move on to – you've got another book that I got to read that I really enjoyed called Turning Tiger. Now, this one's coming out through Arcana, and you were telling me before we started to record a little bit about why that's coming through Arcana rather than through you guys.
Yes. I met the CEO of Arcana Publishing in Toronto at Fan Expo last August, and we got along well. We hit it off straight away, and we were swapping experiences and information about where we were with publishing. I mean, Sean's been very successful. He's built up his company from nothing to being one of the biggest comic publishers in North America. And he's been very shrewd in how he's done it. Managed to keep ownership, not sell out to investors. He's a real success story in these troublesome times in publishing. So we were talking about ways we could collaborate and work together. And Tony Tiger seemed to be the first opportunity we had to do that. So what the big thing for us was that Arcana have a very good relationship with Diamond Books Distribution, and we don't. Now, we're too new, we're too small. Our stuff goes through Diamond Comics to the direct market, and they do a great job with the comic book stores for us. But when it comes to reaching bookstores, it's a little bit harder. So we thought we'd experiment with our business relationship and put this title through Diamond Books and see how successful it would be to release it into bookstores that way, as well as the comic book stores. So it'll be in previews next week. And so far, the buzz has been great.
I got a chance to read the story, and the thing that's interesting about it to me is that it really appeals to both male and female readers. The main character in the story is a young girl, but she ends up interacting with a robot, and the robot design was really cool to me because it looks like the robot's wearing a hat, you know, and it's just kind of an interesting thing. There's all these little hints as to what's going on, and of course, you know, you read them and go, well, that's interesting. The woman, the scientist, refers to them as her children and things like that, and I just find that the whole story was really interesting. The art was really, again, really clean and strong and easy to read. It's in two parts. We come to find out what's really going on, and I was very surprised, you know, being a sci-fi fan. I had not heard this concept before about what makes the robots tick, and I don't want to spoil it either because I want people to read the book, but it's a great story. It's a wonderful art. It's so easy to read. I don't think you have to be a young kid to be able to read it, although the girl is in her early teens or middle teens, but the thing about the story that's good is that it's fun, it's interesting, there's danger involved, and yet there's all kinds of aspects to it that I think anybody who reads it would really like.
Great. Yeah, I know. I agree. And to take on your point about kids reading this comic book, talking to other creators, people like Steve Niles, you hear about how to brand a book so that people don't see it's all ages and go, oh, well, it's obviously not for an adult to read. I mean, when Rich brought this story to me, I thought it was going to be another one of those pitches where I try and think of something positive for the writer and send them off to carry on with their careers because it's not going to be for us. But what he pitched me in 2 minutes was a story that I knew would work for adults, for teenagers, and for younger readers, and also for girls as well as boys. And I have two daughters, and trying to find mainstream comics that appeal to them is a lot harder job than it is for a boy. Mm-hmm. So with this story, Rich has done the very hard task of doing a story which appeals to everybody, genuinely, mm-hmm. no matter your age or your gender. And to be able to surprise the twist, you know, the twist that comes in the story, mm-hmm. once you know it's there, you go back and reread it, and you're like, well, it's so obvious.
Yep.
But I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, well, that was exactly what my reaction was. Oh, that's why that happened. Now, and Rich, by the way, you mentioned is Richard Clements.
Yes.
Is the guy who writes the story. Art is by Alex Moore, and very nice, clean art. So I'm interested. You know, you wonder why it's called Turning Tiger until you get to the last page, and it's explained. Yeah. On the last page, which I like, because I couldn't figure, why is this called Turning Tiger? The whole story of the book, I'm going, why is this? Because I love to know why. So when I got to the last page and it explained this, okay, now I get it. But you're right, is that there are a lot of people who are seeking literature and comics for young girls. There's a guy that I talk with a lot who has a young daughter, and he's constantly trying to expose her to comics. She'll start to understand it and then appreciate the medium. And she very much likes these kinds of stories. She's very good at discerning things. So I think this would be a perfect book for me to suggest to him to give to his daughter.
That's great. Yeah, no, I agree. I do some visual storytelling workshops in the local schools around me, and I use Turning Tiger with the grade 4 to 7 kids and boys and girls, and I watch as they read in the comic to see whether they're just doing it because they want to look like they're paying attention, to see whether they get bored. Mm-hmm. And the whole class reads avidly, and then the teacher tells them to write down what they think, and virtually all the comments are positive. And most of the kids are saying they want to know what happens next in the story.
Yeah.
Which is always great.
That's when you have a good comic, when you have, it's a page turner. Now what? Now what? You can't wait to turn the page so you can find out what's going on next. When is this book coming out as far as paperback? Is this going to come in paper, or is it going to be a digital comic?
It's available digitally now on our iPad app or from our web store, also from Graphically. But the collected edition, which is, what's the best way to describe it? Like a premium paperback, will be out in April.
I'm not
sure the exact date in April. I have to ask Sean because I haven't seen the exact release date. But I know it's in previews next week for an April release, and I think it's pretty early in April. And it's really nicely presented. I've got a copy of it here, and it looks great.
Well, I got to read a promo copy of it, not a paper copy, but an electronic version. And it was great fun to read.
You'll just give me your address. I'll send you down the printer.
I like that very much. I show it to my friend, and then he can kind of let his daughter see, and they can order it because he works in a comic store, so all that will work out just right. But it's a great book. It's fun. It's a very different story. It's unique. So often in comics, we read the same thing over and over again, and stories don't really come to any kind of resolution because you've got to put the book out next month. But this book has a very interesting resolution, really kind of fun at the end. The girl never stops being a kid, which I really liked about that, and the parents and the whole thing. It's such a fascinating mix about what's going on, that when you find out what's happening, I think you'll be enchanted. It's just an amazing, and a little bit horrified at the same time.
Yeah.
It's really good. I like a story that'll do that. It's that'll elicit different kind of reactions from me, and Turning Tiger definitely does that.
Yeah, it deals with a few different themes, but I think it's okay to scare kids a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll get back to scaring in a minute because you've got an audio collection that's out that I kind of find interesting. But I want to get to a book that you guys put out that I was very fascinated to read. And I got a chance to read a promotional copy of it, and that's Shame.
Virtue loved the world about her. All others first her arts would nurture. The pain of children she did lift, for healing was her special gift. For a child of her own, she dearly wished, a selfish moment for a family missed. But evil heard her little thought, and granted her need, with darkness brought. Her selfless life undone in a moment, Mother Virtue's baby heralds evil most potent. Now knowing the danger her daughter will bring, a prison Virtue tucks her in. There she'll grow, attended by nymphs, hidden from her father's merest glimpse. But if knowledge somehow she was to gain, revenge would surely be her gain. Though born of a good mother she may be, the soul of her father is there to see. For pain and destruction her gifts will be, our world enslaved, her legacy.
Shame is like a modern day parable. This, I don't think I would want kids reading this so much. But this is very much of an adult thing, and yet it's fantasy. If you are fans of fantasy and things like that, this is something that I think you would enjoy. God, the artwork is gorgeous. I think this is more of a painted feel as opposed to a cleaner comic style. And the story is just an amazing story. Do you want to talk a little bit about this book?
Sure, yes. This was the book which really put us on the map as far as being a publisher goes. Laverne Kanjursky was brought on board to do colouring on the War of 1812. I'm trying to use as many North American creators as I can now to balance out our UK-centric creators now that I'm on this side of the pond. And Laverne, the first thing he did after we talked about the colour palette and the look and the feel for the War of 1812 was say, can I pitch you a story? And I get pitch stories all the time, and I do everything in my power to say no to all of them, because we're a small publisher. We're still learning how to publish comics. Now, we're all creators, so learning the business side of it and the marketing and distribution and all that stuff is, you know, it's going to take us a long time to figure it all out. But Laverne did the same thing Rich did, that he pitched me a story in 2 minutes that was just so intriguing. That I couldn't say no. I had to say yes, send me the script. And that script was great too. It's a mother and daughter tale, like a modern fairy tale, a proper fairy tale with a darkness really a big part of the story. Not Disney-fied. Nothing wrong with what Disney did for the stories. They're great for kids and everything. But the old-style fairy stories that, you know, the villain, whether it's a magical creature or a human, is nasty. It's dark. The world that he weaved was compelling, and he said this is a 3-book story, so I understand if you don't want to commit to 3 books. And I was like, well, okay, that's probably 3 to 3.5 years of time to get this done. And then he said John Bolton wants to paint it.
Ooh.
And I was like, okay, I know that name. I kind of think he's the guy that does the watercolor stuff at the moment. Yeah, so that was where we started. And I spoke to John, and he was, I love this book. I'm going to work my heart out for it. And every page in Shame is a hand-painted John Bolton watercolor canvas, which he sends scans in. And it's beautiful. Absolutely,
it's gorgeous.
Stunning.
I have to admit that when I read it, it was just an amazing read. You talk about scaring children, stuff like that. There are parts of the story that are extremely scary and extremely interesting. But, you know, a lot of the fairy tales have been that way. You know, Hansel and Gretel and all these things are all scary because, you know, there are things that we should be scared of. And like the X-Files, there are things today, even in our modern and enlightened era, that can scare us. And shame, when I got done reading the first edition, now this, you talk about three volumes. I think I read the first volume. And to read the thing, you come and you find a lot of interesting things, and things kind of come full circle by the end of the story. And I found that to be an interesting way to tell that story. So, and you know, it's interesting too. We were talking about women and comics and stuff. This is a story that focuses largely on women. Yeah. And I still think that you don't necessarily have to be a woman to enjoy it, because I enjoyed it. When I got to the end of it, I was very much like, whoa, that was an interesting story. So I think guys as well as gals can enjoy this with the same amount of interest.
I think so. It's hard for me to track sales through the comic book stores, but the sales that we've had directly ourselves through our website and through the conventions, we're heading to about 70% women buying the book, as opposed to the usual split, which is about 70% men, which is great. And some of the conventions we're at are not strictly comic conventions. They're like entertainment expos. And we have a lot of people that just come by the store and say, what are you doing? And looking at the audiobooks. And then especially women look at Shame and they start looking at the artwork, and then we tell them what the story's about and they get very excited and buy the book, and then we have an email back saying how much they loved it and they want to know when the second one's coming. And it's really encouraging for us to know that women, especially women that have never read a comic book before, will pick up and read a book like that and really enjoy it and then get into reading comics.
Interesting. CrossGen was a company that tried to cater to a female audience. Yes. And unfortunately, they went under. I thought they were actually doing a quite good job of it. And then suddenly they ran out of money, I guess, or something. So I'm happy to see that you're doing that, because I'm seeing more and more women when I go to comic stores. And I think that's an audience that needs to be reached. So I think you're doing a good job with this. I think this is a smart move.
Thank you. It's just, I'd say it's just luck. But now, one of the things I said when we decided we were going to publish comic books, we've read them for all our lives and we love them, was that we wanted to try and do things that didn't necessarily cater to the hardcore existing audience of comics. We wanted to try and do things for younger readers. We wanted to do things which would work for women as well, if we could, without forcing the story. And it just happens that some of these stories just came to us without us really looking for them, like Shame. Like Turning Tiger, they weren't, we need to manufacture a story which works for this demographic. It was, this story is a great story, and it just happens to tap into some of the values that we're trying to push.
Would you want people to submit stories to you, or how do you go about that?
What I normally tell people is to send an email in, and then at the moment we're not looking for any more titles this year. So I have said that if you really, really want to send something in and get some feedback quickly, send in your best idea in less than a page, so I can get an idea for where we are with the tone and the genre and all that kind of stuff, the characters. And then I will ask for the script at some point if I think it's going to work with what we're doing. And then we're looking at early in 2013 to look for some more titles. Okay. We've got so much happening this year already that to try and take anything on, it wouldn't do the creators any service, and it would, the stuff that we're doing at the moment would suffer, because we just don't have enough time to push any more books this year.
Well, maybe it's a good thing if people can kind of get their act together and they don't necessarily have to do it right now. They can actually think about it and realize this is a place they could submit for your examination, you know, later down the road when they've got it put together in the way that it works best.
Yeah, I had one guy that sent me 25 two-page pitches in one go, and then he emailed me the next day saying, when are you going to get me some feedback? Are you kidding me? Seriously? Make it easy for me, because I'm trying my hardest to say no to everything. Because as soon as you say yes, it's a time and a money commitment, you know, and a long-term relationship. The guys that we work with are now, we're all very good friends. And to let somebody into that group, they're going to have to really sell themselves. Mm-hmm. So put your best work forward. There are, of course, certain creators, if they were to send something through, because we have probably been fans of their work in the past, or are very aware of just how good a writer or artist they are, that we might move them up the reading list a bit quicker, a bit faster. But that said, Rich was an unknown writer when he sent in Turning Tiger, and we went for that straight away. Mm-hmm. And now he's very much part of the Renegade family, so you never cool. know. I do talk to people at conventions too, and we look at artists' portfolios, and we have been trying with some of the newer artists that have come in with their portfolios to find pinups, to find sketches and places where we can start showcasing their artwork alongside the established artists that we're working with, so they have a chance to get some stuff out there and work with us and see what it's like. Mm-hmm. because it's not like working with DC or Marvel with us.
Right. Okay, now, one question I want to ask before we get off of comics. I have to ask everybody this. Digital versus print. What's your feeling about going forward? Are you going to balance the digital versus the print, or how are you going to approach this?
It's a minefield. God, I like technology. Mm-hmm. I like the advantages that it brings. I understand completely the dangers as well. Mm-hmm. I know that virtually anything you publish, within 24 to 48 hours, there's going to be a scanned version of it available online somewhere. And that people will do it. Now, I have arguments with, like, my brother's 10 years younger than me. He's a musician, and he's from the generation where they were used to just looking for the music, the TV shows and the films online and watching them without really thinking about it. And my argument was, like, people will pay $5 for a cup of coffee, and they will stand there telling you that they're not willing to pay $1.99 for a comic book digitally, because it's overpriced. And you're like, well, if you could get your coffee digitally online for free, you would, and you wouldn't think twice about not paying for it. And that's the same thing with comics. Just because you can doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. As far as trying to do the right thing by digital and print moving forward, we're still figuring it out. We have our iPad app now, which has quietly been out for a couple of weeks now. We haven't really done a big song and dance for it because we just wanted to see what the initial reaction was, tweak it a little bit. And our developer in New York, a company called Novatrix, are doing an update this week, which will improve things immensely. We release PDFs and CBZs through our website. We partner with Graphically to release comics digitally there. We are supposed to be on Comixology, but they've gone quiet in the last 2 months, so I'm kind of not sure what's going with that. But we'll still do print, maybe not the monthlies, but definitely collected editions. Although we've got a series coming out called Department of Monsterology, written by Gordon Rennie and being drawn by PJ Holden over in Ireland. It's kind of like your BPRD, your Hellboy territory, but with a very English spin. And it's a great, great series, and we thought would make a great digital comic for four issues and then a nice collection. But the reaction we had to the previews in New York and Toronto, and then talking to Jay at Diamond, it looks like we're going to release it as a printed comic each month, 4 months as well, because there's enough of a buzz for it.
Well, the truth of it is that I know that comics are a habitual medium, and if you don't put something out every month, sometimes people will forget about you. But what I've learned as a reader is that quality is worth seeking out, and it's worth waiting for. So I'm not necessarily anxious to have everything come out every week, the same books come out. There are books that are worth waiting for, and I think that, like, Turning Tiger and Shame on Those books are definitely keep on the radar, and it's worth waiting for them to come out and come out right.
Hooray. I'm glad you said that. That's how we feel. Our first title was Channel Evil, which was written by Alan Grant, and it was his first move into horror, and drawn by Shane Oakley, who's probably best well-known for doing Albion, which was loosely Alan Moore with Leah Rippon. And unfortunately, Shane got very ill after doing the first issue, which meant we had a big, big, big gap before putting out the second issue of the comic. We lost all the readers, we lost the goodwill, we lost all the stuff that we built up in the campaign to get the first comic out. And what that taught me is to wait until we've got almost 90% to 100% of the whole run finished before releasing the first one, just in case something happens. So Department of Monsterology is almost half done, the four comics, but we still won't submit it until we know that we're guaranteed to deliver each comic its best quality on time.
Well, the truth is, like Dark Knight Returns, for example, Frank Miller, he does the first issue comes out, the next issue comes out a month later, issue 3 comes out 6 months later, issue 4 comes out a year after that. And, you know, if Chris, that was an amazing classic book, and I was willing to wait for that. But you're right, a lot of people, if they haven't seen it in a little while, they forget all about it. The smart way is to do it the way that you're doing it. So I'm glad to hear that. Let's talk, though, real briefly before I let you go about Spine Chillers, which is something very different from everything else that you're doing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Okay, so I mentioned Doug Bradley earlier. Now, as well as being a well-known horror icon, you know, from his work with Hellraiser, he's also a classically trained actor, and he has a fantastic reading voice. He'd just finished doing the audiobook version of Clive Barker's Mr. Begone. They're best friends since school. He finished doing the recording, and he said, you know, I love the work of Edgar Allan Poe. I love the classic horror, H.P. Lovecraft, Charles Dickens, H.G. Wells. You know, it'd be really cool if we could do some audiobooks about those stories. You know, choose his favorite short classic horror stories from the masters of horror writing, and then do the definitive audiobook versions of those stories. Now, part of this came around because after doing the audiobook recording, he looked for Lovecraft, for Poe, for Bierce online to listen to them. And the recordings that he could find, he didn't think the quality was very good. You know, oftentimes it felt like the reader had no experience at reading a story and was just banging through the words with no care for the pronunciation or the punctuation. So he said, how about we make it our mission to do the best recording of these stories, these much-loved stories? And I thought it was a great idea. And we pulled in some of our friends from the film world, composers and sound designers, to just give it that little bit of music and sound design which enhances the stories just in key points, not wall-to-wall music and sound effects. And we started recording. And we've now recorded 13 volumes worth of stories, which is about 32 hours worth of stories. And we've got volume 10 and 11 coming out over the next 2 months.
Wow.
And we'll have 13 out in time for October.
Great. The nice thing about it is you guys get to do a variety of things, and I think that helps your creativity. And like I said, the stuff that I've read I really like, so I'm hoping things continue to go really well for Renegade. Do you want to talk a little bit about how people can access your product and your website address, things like that?
Okay, sure. Thanks, Wayne. The easiest way to find us is to Google Renegade Arts Entertainment. That is the name of a company, and that is the name of our website. So renegadeartsentertainment.com is our web address, where you can find all the information about our comic books, about the Spine Chillers audiobooks, and the short movies that we've done with Doug on there, and about some of the other things that we're doing as well. Like, there's a school play version of the War of 1812 book, which has been adapted by Tab Murphy, who's an Oscar-nominated screenwriter from Hollywood. He's a fantastic writer. We're on Twitter, Renegade Arts Ent is our name, and you can find us on Facebook as well. There's the Renegade Arts Entertainment Facebook page, and then there's a Facebook page for all the different titles. And all the creators involved in each of the stories and the things that we do are members of all the different Facebook pages, so you can ask them questions directly, find out some of the sneak peeks of what's coming up. On the Turning Tiger page, you'll be able to look up the interview that I'm about to do with Richmond, and you will see everything that he has to say about the creative process, about where the idea came from, and also where the second book is going to go, because we have decided to do a second story, which he's working on at the moment. And I'm very keen to find out exactly what he's planning to do with Sarah and Jen and the others.
Very cool. It's great to find more quality product out there. And what you're creating is great material and great storytelling. So I wish you much success. I hope that this takes off and does really well for you guys, and we get to see a lot more from Renegade.
Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time out to talk to me today.
Good to talk with you.
This is Nick Tarabay, Asher, and Spartacus, Gods of the Arena, Spartacus, Blood and Sand, and the new Spartacus as well. And I'm here at SFP Now. Keep listening and keep watching. Thank you so much.
Faster than a speeding bullet. Than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
Time for me to review this week's comics. The book of the week for me this week was Marksman number 5 of 6, which is written by David Baxter, who I've interviewed on this podcast about this very series in the past. The book is really interesting science fiction and examination of social issues. It takes place in San Diego, where after the United States has collapsed financially, everything's broken up into smaller city-states, and San Diego is being attacked by Texas. Really interesting things happen, and the characters are great fun to watch as they go through these things. The name of the book comes from the ancestors of Navy SEALs. They bind together as the Marksmen. The story is fast-paced and powerful, and the art is perfect for the book, which is very clear and dynamic. It's smart, action-packed storytelling, the kind I love to read and enjoy. So I can't wait for issue number 6 to come out before very long. The thing about this book that always makes me smile is that I read one of the issues during the 2011 San Diego Comic-Con. Comic-Con, and it was really odd to think that I was in the middle of a place that could be a war zone someday, especially out there. So, great book. Be sure to pick up Marksman if you haven't started reading it already. New 52 reviews. Let's get into DC's books. The Flash number 5 was my favorite this week from the New 52. It continues to explore a world with super speed in it. Great fun. Batman the Dark Knight number 5 has Superman showing up for the first time in these books, facing Batman. Aquaman number 5 puts Arthur in the middle of a desert where he's literally a fish out of water. Justice League number 5 has the group's formation continuing with Darkseid appearing for the very first time. Teen Titans number 5 has the rest of the team fighting Superboy, and it ends interestingly, really the only way it could, I guess. Next, I enjoyed Superman as George Perez keeps throwing interesting things at the Man of Steel, although this is probably Mr. Perez's last issue. The Savage Hawkman brings back one of the hero's longtime foes. I won't spoil who it is. Justice League Dark brings to a conclusion the first storyline and something of the formation of the group. Also, Green Lantern New Guardians number 5 takes an interesting twist regarding the Orange Lanterns. The Fury of Firestorm is the best one so far, with really interesting developments regarding the characters. All-Star Western has more great Western story, with Jonah Hex torturing Dr. Arkham in Gotham. Voodoo number 5 features a big surprise at the end. I, Vampire has Batman guest starring, so that's going pretty well. Blackhawks was the least of the bunch, but still pretty good, and I'm sorry that this book is coming to an end, but I guess, you know, nothing lasts forever, unfortunately, especially in comics. Other books worth picking up this week were The Spontaneous Hardcover from Oni Press. What a great book that is, and it's collected in a very nice hardcover volume. DC has Universe Online Legends number 22 and Legion Secret Origin number 4. Alpha Flight, the conclusion of that series, is out from Marvel. Walking Dead number 93 turns the story in a very interesting way from Image. Incorruptible from Boom Studios is good. Sixth Gun number 18 continues to be an outstanding series from Oni Press. And Green Hornet Annual number 2, as well as Kevin Smith's Bionic Man, came out from Dynamite. And those are the books that came out this week. Okay, it's time for this week's news and previews. With me, as always, is Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
I'm very well, thank you. Just full of a cold, but, you know, nothing new there.
Okay, and Gianluca Glazer, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. Well, why don't we get right to the news? I don't have any news items this week, so Gianluca, why don't we start with you?
It's a bit of a slow week. In news, and we already talked about DC Comics changing their logos. Well, two other publishers followed suit. Bongo Comics and Oni Press both debuted new logos this week.
Huh.
Oni Press, not too crazy about it. You have, like, a corner of a face in the logo, and it kind of looks like the Obey face that you see. If you're in LA, you see that a lot. Bongo Comics, I like the new logo. It's interesting. They're also planning, like, kind of a bit of a revamp kind of thing. They're coming out with some top secret project with Matt Groening. Is that how you pronounce his name?
I think it's Matt Groening.
Groening, yeah.
Oh, Groening. Groening. There you go. Thank you.
Groening.
So, yeah, he's got a top-secret project, you know, I mentioned last week about the Millhouse comic. So they're doing a little bit of revamp and getting a bit of press, so it's interesting.
Do you think that these changes of images are kind of happening because of what's going on with Marvel and DC? They're trying to reestablish their part of the marketplace?
It's interesting. In the case of Bongo, they have their own market. They do pretty well. They've been running for close to 15 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a way of shaking things up. They have a new creative person in control, so they're doing something new to spruce things up. Maybe it's been spurred on by the way DC kind of took charge with the way they revamped with the new 52.
Mm-hmm.
Oni Press, I'm not too sure about them. They're a growing company. They've been solid in the past 2-3 years in terms of creating some really good, award-worthy stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
like Petrograd.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's interesting to see. Maybe it is their reaction to DC doing that.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah. Okay. Any other news?
Yeah, a few other pieces. Rob Granito, who, if you may infamously remember last year, was kicked out of comic book conventions because of swiping art, pretty much, you know, claiming it is his own work.
Okay.
Pretty nasty guy. Anyway, he started an online petition to get back in the comic book convention. He got the attention of a lot of people. They even started some petitions to keep him away from conventions. Interesting bit of news there.
So let me get this straight. He wants to go and he wants to steal people's stuff, and then he gets kicked out of conventions. He wants to be able to go back where he can go back and steal people's stuff again?
Yeah, he wants to basically just sell copied artwork as his own, you know, a few little embellishes here and there on the background, stuff like that.
Okay, that's what you call chutzpah, I think. That's amazing.
Free comic book day is coming beginning of May, but you can already check out some previews on the Free Comic Book Day site from companies like Archaea, which has a hardcover book coming out. You can get a small preview of that. Image Comics with their 20th anniversary book. Oni Press, which has an interesting book coming out. Viz Media, which is doing the anime Voltron. And there's a few other companies there that you can check out previews for their work.
Cool.
And interesting retailer news, Andrew Neil of Chapel Hill Comics, he got into a deal with Adventure Time number 1 from Kaboom, which is Boom Studios' kids book. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of publishers do is they'll do an exclusive retailer cover for the debut of a big book. IDW did that with the Rocketeer first issue with Ultimate Comics. They did an exclusive cover, and it was drawn by, what's his name from the Boulevard? Tommy Lee Edwards did that cover. So, you know, a lot of publishers will get a special artist, somebody to do an exclusive cover image for a particular retailer, because that particular retailer promises to buy a certain amount of books, and they promote that book heavily too, so it's a win-win situation. You know, they get also a bit of a discount when they buy so many as well, too. But getting back on topic, Andrew Neil of Chapel Hill Comics, he has an exclusive book cover for Adventure Time from Kaboom, which he actually drew himself.
Wow. Oh,
so if you ever seen any of the ads, or it's based off of a popular comic book series, and this book is projected to be a really big seller, so it's going to be interesting to see that.
Well, you know what puzzles me is that Adventure Time is on Cartoon Network, which is owned by Warner Brothers. Prior to this, everything that was ever on Cartoon Network came out under DC. So I'd be very fascinated to find out, how did Kaboom get a hold of Adventure Time? Did they actually outbid DC?
It's interesting. It's purely for publishing the comic, because Diamond Comics has merchandise for Adventure Time as well, that they have exclusives. So...
Well, the one thing I would love to know is, why does he wear that crazy white hat? You know, when I was in New York Comic Con, I went up to the Cartoon Network booth and I said, look, I said, do you know anything about these shows? And the guy was at the desk said, well, yeah, I know something. I said, why does he wear the white hat? And he goes, I don't know. And I said, well, you know, are they ever going to tell us how? He said, I doubt it. I mean, it's just the way, it's just what he does. And I'm like, oh, okay. So a lot of thoughts being put into these things. Okay, I get it. But I'd love to know why he wears the crazy white hat. Because now when you go, like when we were in New York, you see people walking around with those white Adventure Time hoods on. It's fascinating to see that. It's interesting how something that makes no sense at all is perfectly fine. And everybody else can start doing it. And it's a fashion statement, I guess. John, look at more news?
Just a little bit in terms of April titles. Previews for February comes out this coming week. IDW and Boom Studios have told, you know, what they're having in the catalog. Mm-hmm. Interesting, IDW has Richard Starks Parker, The Score, written and illustrated by Darwin Cook. So this is the third Parker book. I'm really looking forward to that. Looks amazing. Mm-hmm. Popeye number 1, I mentioned briefly last week. Roger Langridge is writing it, and art's by Bruce Ozella. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Wallywood Galaxy, that's another interesting book that's coming out in April. So I like everything Wallywood. He's probably most famous for the EC comics. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to definitely check that out. Mm-hmm. And on Boom Studio side, they have Sam Humphries doing a book called Fanboys vs. Zombies number 1. So that looks really interesting. Mm-hmm. And also Rich Johnson, writer for Bleeding Cool, he has not one, not two, but 4 comics coming out from Boom. And they all seem to be spoofs of the superhero genre. You have Rich Johnson's The Vengefuls, Rich Johnson's Captain American Idol, Rich Johnson's Iron Muslim. This is interesting. Trapped in a war zone, Al Stark has an epiphany. Americans are superstitious and cowardly lot. I shall become a Muslim. Al, newly inspired, takes his jihad to New York City in a showdown with a freedom fighter who resembles a certain Cape Crusader. And then Rich Johnson's Scientology.
Oh, goodness.
So...
Interesting
stuff there. Yeah. And also Shannon Wheeler has a new book, too, called I Told You So. So he won last year for the Eisner Award for I Thought You Would Be Funnier.
Ah, okay.
I'll probably be under Boomtown.
I bet. I bet. Okay, Ian, how about you?
There's one little bit of news that I'm surprised that John Mook is not mentioned, but I think he's probably saved it for me, and that's basically that Image is bringing out the second and final trade of Moriarty next month.
Yeah.
And that's a bringing take on Professor Moriarty from the Sherlock Holmes universe by Daniel Corey. Mm-hmm. So that'll be out next month on trade.
As I remember, Daniel Corey has got other projects in the works, so Moriarty isn't going to be going much longer. Is that how I understand that?
He's taking a break after issue 9, which is going to be collected in the Volume 2 trade. And he's doing another book. I believe it's coming out through Image. It's going to be really interesting. I don't know who the artist is going to be for that yet, but it looks to be exciting, kind of a detective story on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that. I was going to say, Moriarty Volume 2 comes out March 14th.
Oh, excellent. Okay, Ian, any other ones?
The other bit of news is Print Media, which is a relatively new company that's it's actually based in Eastern Europe, but it releases titles to the UK. I released in a new trade paperback. It's called Frontier, The Weird Wild West. It's aimed at all ages, really, from 8 and upwards. And it's called Frontier and All Ages Weird Western. It's by Jason Cobley and Andrew Wildman. And this is the book's description. The Wild West, and Daisy Adams is suddenly all alone, living on the plains, left with her father's old colt and a catapult. When Mitch Seeker, the son of the sheriff, runs into her life, and they've been running ever since, chasing werewolves, ghosts and demons, on a quest to track down the man who turned them both into orphans and unleashed weirdness into the Wild West. In 1866, out on the frontier, things got weird. History failed to record everything that happened, but Daisy wrote it all down in her diaries. In Frontier, we follow Mitch and Daisy as they seek justice, but end up finding more adventure and danger than they counted on. It's weird, it's wild, it happened out west. It's first published in the acclaimed Random House weekly comic, the DFC, which was very short lived weekly kids anthology comic that came out around about 2008. And basically Print Media's bought it all together and put it all together in a trade. Mm-hmm. It's now actually being considered as a possible TV series with a trailer shot earlier in the year. It'll appeal to anyone who's ever enjoyed a cowboy film or comic, but has an avid fantasy element while drawing plenty more readers.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
With great characters, werewolves, ancient gods and demons, and the bad guy that bullets can't kill, there's plenty to enjoy. Mm-hmm. And that's coming out pretty soon in the UK.
All right, I've got two items that you reminded me of. Number one, Marvel has started a new line called All Ages. And it's the first two books are going to be Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, both based on the Disney XD shows. It's interesting, we were talking a couple of podcasts ago about the fact that Marvel didn't have a kids line. I guess they must have been listening to us, because a few days after we talked about it, out comes this release that they're starting an All Ages thing. So I got a kick out of that. Another thing was that I got communication from a guy who does this book called Harbor Moon. Harbor Moon is a book about a guy who goes to a Midwestern town, and he discovers that his father and a lot of the people in the town were actually werewolves. And it's an interesting painted book, and it's really good. I really liked it. They sent me a premiere copy back when it came out, and I got an email from the guy from behind it, and they've actually put together a video based on the comic, which is really cool. So if you want to see the video, go to YouTube and put in Harbor Moon.
Do you know who the publisher is?
It is. Ryan Colucci is the guy who does it. It's Drive Through Comics. Does it?
Drive Through Comics.
Yeah, it's a good book. And if you want to go to harbor-moon.com, you'll find out much more about it. And he was telling me that they actually have this in mind for a trilogy of books, but he was hoping to get more sales on the first one before they moved forward on the second. So if you enjoy that kind of book, go to harbor-moon.com. You'll probably see pages. Yeah, you do see pages from the book, as well as it'll show you how to get to the video, I'm sure. So it's available digitally. You can go to Graphically to get that, and you can buy the book through Amazon. So it's a really good book. I wanted to be sure and mention that because he contacted me and let me know about this really great video they put together based on the book. So let's get on to the previews. And Gianluca, why don't we go ahead and start with you?
Okay, for February 1st, I'm going to check out Animal Man number 6. Looks interesting. From DC Comics. DC also has Detective Comics number 6. Mm-hmm. Image, what looks interesting is Fatale number 2. I really enjoyed issue number 1, Brubaker and Phillips. And for Boom, they have Balan the Outcast number 3, which is a really interesting series written by Michael L. Nelson.
Okay, I enjoyed that book a lot. That Bell and the Outcast is really good. I really like it. It's the first time I think that Mr. Nelson has been doing an ongoing series like that. So he's got a lot of good things in mind. This is a lot of fun to read, so I really like it a lot. Okay, Ian, how about you?
Oh, this week I'll be checking out Action Comics Volume 6, but there's an Action Comics combo pack coming out. I don't know what that is, but you know the difference is it's $4.99 as opposed to $3.99. So
that allows you to download the digital version.
Oh right, okay. Why don't just say Action Comics 6 plus digital version?
Combo.
Sounds better to say combo pack.
Just sounds like a comic that you can get and you can eat. Also, Night John Luke can be checking out Detective Comics, but I'll also be checking out Stormwatch, which is out this week. You know, also coming out this week from Boom is Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
And I'll definitely be checking that out because I'm loving that. I'm also loving the regular Planet of the Apes story. And we've got a Doctor Who ongoing Volume 2 coming out this week. And this is something I will not necessarily be checking out, but it's just coming out this week for any Doctor Who fans. Big Doctor Who fan, but I'm not really a fan of, you know, reading the comics. So I just thought I'd mention it for anyone that is.
Okay.
And also, as previewed on, well, previewed on this week's SFP Now, really, but more like reviewed, is the Warriors of Mars, which comes out this week through Dynamite. So,
all good stuff. The things I'm looking forward to, but besides what we've talked about, also out is the Warlord of Mars Annual Number 1, which is good. I got a chance to read that. That was a good book. I like that a lot. The Warlord of Mars series, great stuff. If you are interested in literate comics, I think that those are so much better than the Marvel versions, which came to an end, I believe. Rachel Rising, which is a really quirky series. I think if anybody wants to read something that's different, Rachel Rising is a good one. Number 5 is out this week. Irredeemable, number 34, which is out with we're crossing over Incorruptible and Irredeemable. We had a big fight in the last week's issue, which was Incorruptible, and that was good. I like that a lot. Damage, number 5 of 6 is out from our friends at Radical. I want to mention a couple of others. Invincible, number 88, which I always like. I think that's a good one. As far as Marvel goes, there's a Winter Soldier number 1. We're not exactly sure who that is. A lot of Marvel books these days start out and there's a character involved, like with the Red Hulk, for example. We don't know exactly who this is and we have to go through a while to figure it all out. And that's what's happening in the Winter Soldier. The Winter Soldier, which was originally Bucky Barnes, might be someone else this time. Another Marvel book that I really like is Avengers Academy, which is really good. That's number 25 is coming out, which I like. That book is very good. I agree with you on Fatale. They're actually putting a second printing of number 1 for Fatale out, which I find really interesting. As far as DC goes, of course, I'm on the new 52. The ones that are already canceled but are still going at the moment are Static Shock. Green Arrow is with I think the new writer starts up here. I think Anne Nesenti is coming up. It's not this one. It's the next one. So Hawk and Dove, which is canceled, is coming out this week. Justice League International, Men of War, which is canceled, OMAC, which is canceled. This is a big canceled week,
yeah,
as far as DC goes. So, but I'm still going to carry on with them till the end. The ones that are continuing on are Swamp Thing, as you mentioned, Animal Man, and Action Comics are going on. Batwing, which I liked. Red Lanterns, of course. I like that book a lot. I think that's a good book. So anything else before we call it quits?
I just wanted to mention, I think Animal Man and Swamp Thing are kind of crossing over.
One of the interesting things, if you listen to what Jeff Lemire and Scott Snyder have been talking about, and this is why, again, why I said it's good to go back and read issue number 1. Issue number 1 of Animal Man and issue number 1 of Swamp Thing actually hint at each other about the fact that the red and the green are against the black or the rot. And if you read those first two issues, you actually see where they talk about each other, although you don't know it at the time, that that's what they're talking about. Very cool stuff. Those two guys are friends, and I think they decided to do this before the books ever hit, that these guys would actually be somewhat linked, but we wouldn't know it starting out of the gate. So, very cool. There's a lot of creativity involved, like Batman number 5, which was fantastic. I understand that's selling out, and there's likely to be another printing of that. And if you read Batman number 5, you know why that's such a great book. What a book that was. All right, and on that note, we'll come to a conclusion this week's news and previews. Thanks, guys. We'll be back next week. Have a look at what's new in your local comic shop. Angry Birds, that popular app, has got more related items out. There's a clicker pen, there are plush tiny toppers, and that should be a good thing for people who like that game. Interesting stuff. And there's also a 3-pack puzzle erasers, in case that's not enough.
There are Beavis and Butthead's large carry-all lunch boxes, as well as a workman's lunch box. There's a Batman Nightfall audio CD, as well as a Batman logo silicone tray. That last one's about $10, so that's kind of interesting. There's Captain America fleece zip-up hoodies in three different sizes. There's a Captain America lanyard as well. There's a Chuck Norris talking 7-inch plush doll for about $14. Kind of interesting. There are Wacky Wobblers aplenty from DC. There's Batman Wacky Wobbler, the Joker, Superman, and Wonder Woman. There's also a wall decal, this time Detective Comics Batman comic cover for about $30. We had a lot of those last week. Don't think there's quite as many this week. Disney's releasing a bunch of stuff, including a traditional Mickey with heart personality pose figure, a Minnie with heart personality pose, a Gonzo with Camilla the chicken for about $50. There's a Goofy 80th anniversary bust, as well as Kermit and Miss Piggy bookends. There is a Lightning McQueen car from Cars. There's also a Lucky personality pose figure, as well as Marie personality pose figure. There's a Mater tow truck, Mickey with heart balloon figure, as well as Mickey with mini bookends. There's a Traditions tractor, and then we get into Doctor Who. There are 100-piece puzzles and a puzzle ball. There's also an Enemies 60-piece puzzle. There's also an action figure set for Enemies of the First Doctor, and an action figure set for the Enemies of the Third Doctor. There are Farscape DVDs. There's a Firefly LaFemme Saffron poster. There's a Flashpoint DVD. There's G.I. Joe, the Real American Hero, 12-inch action figures, and a Series 2 DVD. Godzilla's back with a Criterion collected DVD. Final Wars Logo 2 black t-shirts from Godzilla. There's a Green Lantern Art dog tag that's out. There's also Harry Potter Hermione t-shirts, as well as the Wizard Tournament t-shirts, and there's a Hellraiser Revelations DVD that's out this week. Lord of the Rings War of the Rings 2nd Edition card box and sleeves is out, as well as an upgrade set. Marvel HeroClix Infinity Gauntlet Month 2 Op Kit is out, as well as a Mystique statue for about $60. There are Colossus action figures from Marvel as well. Mortal Kombat has Raiden Wacky Wobblers and a Scorpion and a Shao Kahn Wacky Wobbler as well. There's a Muppets Lanyard for about $6. Muppets and Masterminds Role-Playing Guide. There's also My Bride is a Mermaid DVD. There are Pop Disney Mickey Mouse vinyl figures, as well as Stitch vinyl figures. Robotech has a series of DVDs out as well, as including the Macross Saga and the Masters, the New Generation as well. There's Sarah Jane Adventures Children of Steel audio CD and a Sarah Jane Adventures Collection audio CD. And of course, Doctor Who fans will want to know about that. There's a Spider-Man lanyard, a Spider-Man Spidey suit on red zip-up hoodie. There are also Star Trek Expeditions expansion set, a Tactics HeroClix, and a Tactics HeroClix starter set, Star Wars Class II fighter pod 201-201, as well as a blind bag and a pod multi-pack and vintage vehicle series from Star Wars. There's also a Star Wars Young Readers hardcover Darth Maul Sith Apprentice for about $15. And speaking of Star Wars, there are Darth zip-up hoodies, Boba zip-up hoodies as well. So lots and lots of hoodies this week. Speaking of Wacky Wobblers, and I don't know how I would go with this, but there's a V for Vendetta Wacky Wobbler. I'm not sure that really flies. I don't get that one. There's also the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Trivia Quiz Doctor Who Companion for about $20. There's a Who and Me audio CD as well. There's also Zorro the Complete Series DVD. And I like to end on zombies, so there are zombie plush slippers for $40. I don't know what's making that cost so much, but if you like zombies, you probably want to have that. And that's what's in your comic store this week. And that's a wrap for the 43rd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Next week, I'm hoping to have an interview with Ivan Brandon, a great writer who's doing a lot of good comics these days, so you'll want to be here for that. But until next time, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.